The sports world keeps on turning. That's why we bring you Saturday Sports Talk. Kick your weekend off with the week's top headlines in sports. Get in the game by calling 656-9900 or toll free at 1-866-656-9900. Star 99 is a free call for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. This is Saturday Sports Talk. Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Saturday Sports Talk on the Sports Animal. Every Saturday morning, 8 to 10, 99.1 FM, 990 AM, 99.1thesportsanimal.com, the WNML app, powered by Big Kahuna Wings. John Wilkerson joining me this morning. I'm Eric Kane. Happy to have you guys along for the ride. And it's been a crazy time, obviously, in our world, in the sports world, as sports were canceled. Now they're trying to come back. And, of course, you're seeing the NBA submit a plan. The NHL has a plan to come back. NASCAR is back. Baseball is continuing to try to work towards a resolution for the 2020 campaign, but it has been quite the scene the last couple of weeks between the owners and the players. And wanted to bring on a former big leaguer by the name of Joe Nathan, six-time All-Star, a really, really dominant closer in his day, to a friend of the program, to come on and get his input on the state of baseball. And Joe Nathan joins us now. Joe, thank you for taking the time. How are you this morning?
Doing well. Good morning to you guys.
Well, first and foremost, during this pandemic and during the coronavirus era, how are you? How's the family? And you doing okay throughout this whole process?
Yeah, you know, we're definitely staying at home. We're doing things that, you know, we normally don't get to do, which, you know, is kind of nice at times. Obviously, it's a tough situation. We'd like to get back to normal, but at the same time, I think, you know, we're getting to do some things as a family. We're training out in the backyard together. We're, you know, keeping the kids busy, and they're getting to do things, train, get stronger and bigger, faster, stronger. That's a plan while they're quarantined at home.
Joe, when you kind of sit here and you're looking at, you know, Major League Baseball trying to come back and play some baseball in 2020 when, you know, it's deemed safe. The owners are on one side, the players are on the other. They're fighting over, it was a split revenue 50-50. Now it's a sliding scale. But overall, the grand scheme of things, what are your thoughts kind of about where baseball is in that regard?
You know, it's a different situation. It's going to be unique. You know, hopefully, you know, I know these guys are probably itching to get back out there as players. Same for the owners. You know, I think both sides are in agreement that our country needs baseball, that, you know, throughout all those tough times that we've gone through in this country, that sports and baseball has really, really helped people through the times. So I think they're both in agreement there. So, you know, they're striving towards the same goal, and that's getting back on the field. You know, the tricky part is they're both going to have to give up something this year. And it's just trying to find that happy medium between the two. You know, it's not going to be easy playing 82 games if that's the plan. Figuring out, you know, playoffs, how many playoff teams, division, stuff like that. I think that'll be the easy part. I think it's, you know, it's going to be getting past that almighty dollar and getting away from that and you know, realizing that they're both going to have to give something up. And it's, you know, it's never easy. But, you know, right now I think there's more important agenda, and that's to heal this country and get it back to normalcy.
Joe, it's great to talk to you again, and glad to hear that all is well with you and yours. I do wonder, how many times during your career did the collective bargaining agreement come to an end, and what kind of tone does that set around the league? I mean, were you ever a player rep? What is it like when indeed you've got issues that each side want to see if they can't push through to make a change?
You know, fortunately during my career, you know, the state of baseball was so strong. You know, the bargaining agreement for the most part was really minor stuff. There was really nothing that ever came about that really threatened us having to push and maybe have a work stoppage. So, you know, for me, fortunately, but I was around and got to experience, you know, at least from the outside, when they did have to go through the strike. And you know, I probably as players and owners, that's something you never want to go through. It definitely puts a, you know, sour taste in the fans, fans' mouth for the game. And it takes a lot to get back and get fans back in the game, as we all have seen. So, fortunately, like I said, we never really got close to that. You know, there's always, you know, going to be little bickering here and there, but for the most part, everybody was wanting baseball and never had a moment where we were close to ever stopping, because the state of baseball is so good. And I think that's a situation here where, you know, it is going to be, you know, tough, because it's a new situation, but I think both sides got to realize this could be just for a half a season. The hard part is to, you know, players are going out there, they're putting, they're risking injury for a half a year. I think, you know, time for players too could be a kind of a big negotiating tool if they could figure out a way to, you know, because for a lot of players out there, you know, big league time is really going to be a huge ordeal, sometimes more important than the money. So that could be a tool to negotiate. Who knows? You know, I don't know the details of where these guys are at, but, you know, for me, I would think that'd be a huge tool, especially for the guys that are on the bubble and getting close to that 10-year mark, or even like a 5-year mark to get half of it. So, you know, I think either way, both are going to be in agreement that we need to be on the field and help this country get through what we've gone through.
Yeah, here's hoping that's the case, because, one, it is a great opportunity, but also you would just like to see this be a part of the landscape and baseball take, I think, a big step in the right direction and getting back to perhaps a bigger fan base. And in terms of just the season itself, they weren't that far away from the start of the season. I guess it was just within a couple of weeks when the curtain fell on spring training. It's one thing to miss out on a season due to injury. It's another thing altogether when nobody can play the game. Can you imagine what it must be like to just be told you're not going to play from this point forward, and we're not sure what it's going to take to get you back on the field?
Honestly, I can't even imagine. Especially, I feel. I really feel for the minor league guys. You know, these are guys that really rely on those paychecks throughout the month, and, you know, for their livelihood. So, you know, outside of, you know, and just to be able to take care of your family, you know, these guys are grinding down there and trying to get up to the big leagues and get some security for their family. And then all of a sudden to have this, you know, kind of a, tug pulled out from under their feet and this surprise get thrown at them. You know, forget just having baseball taken away from you. Now you're worried about how you're going to take care of your family. So, you know, more so, I love seeing the guys step up and help out the guys, the younger guys that are in the minors and probably struggling through this time. But, you know, like I said, I couldn't imagine, you know, being ready to go, especially a couple weeks out. These guys are itching to get out of spring training, get to opening day, and all of a sudden this happens, and now you're basically starting over. And, you know, hopefully starting in June, getting back to spring training. I know, you know, these guys have got to be super excited if something can get done. And to get back to a spring training mode, at least you got baseball in on the horizon and a light at the end of the tunnel for these guys.
Former big league closer Joe Nathan joining the program. And Joe, you kind of brought it up right there. You mentioned guys stepping up and taking care of their minor league teammates, their minor leaguers, you know, inside the organization. Your former team, you know, the Minnesota Twins, have vowed that they're going to pay their minor leaguers through the end of June, I believe. You saw David Price of the Dodgers, yep, who's yet to even throw a pitch for the Dodgers, say, well, hey, through the end of June or July, I'm going to, you know, pay all the guys outside of the 40-man roster their, you know, $1,000 a month or whatever it may be. But, you know, coming from, you know, you've been there, you've done the struggle, you've, you know, you put in that work, and you've, you know, been balling on a budget for so long trying to get to the show. Mm-hmm. You know, what's that mean? I mean, that's huge, you're right. I mean, that's got to be just a great act of kindness from those guys to show that towards these minor leaguers.
Well, first of all, it doesn't surprise me to see David Price do something like that amongst the other guys. I mean, there's such good dudes out there, good teammates and guys that, you know, that care and worry about the guys that could be potential teammates of them shortly. So, you know, to see those guys step up, it doesn't surprise me at all. But it's just that, to have that little bit of comfort, you know, $1,000 a month to, you know, like I said, put food on the table for your families during this trying time, and just give them a little bit of sense of ease that, you know, everything's going to be okay. We're going to get through this. We'll get through this thing together and get back on the field and grind it out together. And that's what it's all about. That's, you know, kind of what we always preach when we get into spring training. It's about building chemistry and knowing everybody's got your back. And when you feel that, usually you play a little better on the field too. You play together and it's a better game.
Yeah, because these guys need to stay in, you know, the best shape they could possibly stay in order to be ready if that call were to ever come. And all these guys have to go take on second jobs anyway, and it's just a tough situation to be in. But I want to get your opinion on this as well. It's not been official yet, but the elimination of 42 minor league ball clubs, especially, you know, a league right here that's kind of close in proximity to the Appalachian League here in Northeast Tennessee, is, you know, about half the league resides up there near the Tri-Cities. You know, the Chattanooga Lookouts were part of it as well. What's your thoughts on eliminating 42 minor league ball clubs?
Yeah, you know, just tough. You know, it just goes along with kind of what's going on in the country and throughout the world. You know, you're seeing stores, shops, mom and pop shops that are not able to come back from this, and it's kind of, you know, going right along with minor league parks. And you know, all I could say is hopefully it's not for the long term. Hopefully this is something that could bounce back and you know, along with the rest of the world, hopefully time will heal and get everything back to normalcy. You know, for me, it's, you know, these parks are, you know, sometimes what helps those areas out, those small cities that these ballparks are in. You know, it brings about, you know, so much money and so much excitement for the people. And, you know, for some people, that's their daily routine, going to ballparks and, you know, trying to get them back to something normal. So hopefully these parks can come back and you know, baseball and sports will help, like I said, help this process, help everybody get through this and start to thrive again.
One thing that stands out, Joe, is we have seen a couple of areas of the country where independent ball has been able to find a place and create just what is a fantastic experience. And if indeed we see a reshaping of minor league baseball, do you think that we could see perhaps a few more independent leagues? Because, you know, there are baseball communities that would be greatly supportive. And you also know that perhaps there'd be some quality guys that would be looking for an opportunity to keep playing, don't you think?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think, you know, you look for the positive side of everything. Take these lemons and make lemonade. Maybe that's one of the bright spots throughout this is, you know, we're seeing interest in areas that, you know, probably normally we wouldn't. And so, you know, take it and run with it. And, you know, obviously those leagues, I've had some buddies play in those leagues, and there's some really good talent that comes out of there. And, shoot, I mean, me of all, I've seen guys that have never made it to the big leagues that I scratch my head over it, because, you know, I've seen some of the best ball players never play a day in the big leagues. Guys that have been in independent ball are just behind the wrong guy that's in the big leagues and just kind of sit in the minor leagues. So this could be a time for a guy that normally would never see a spot to have a chance to get up there.
I do have to ask you about this, because as Eric was talking about, 377 career saves, multiple All-Star game appearances as one of the top closers in the game, a Fireman of the Year. But you also started 29 games, and I was just wondering, is there anything more special than a complete game victory where you hit a home run? You did a number on the Reds, and I was just curious as to what you remember about not just the one dinger, 2000, the season, the 2000 season, you hit two dingers. And I'm just wondering, what's it like to come up with a long ball on a day you're also working on the mound?
That actually came against one of my buddies, Denny's Reyes.
That makes it better, right?
yeah, he came over to the Twins shortly thereafter, and we definitely joked about it once he walked in. The first thing he did when he walked in the clubhouse, you know, come over and kind of gave me a little ribbing about about hitting a homer off of him and says I'm a pretty good hitter, but that's not true. So, you know, just one of those days. It was one of those days everything kind of fell into place. You know, for me, the thing I actually remember was facing Griffey Jr. Throughout that game. So out of all the things that happened so well, that's what I really ultimately remember was him stepping in the box and just that surreal moment.
Well, Joe, I appreciate you taking the time and joining us here this morning. I just have one final question, and we'll let you step away. When you watch baseball right now, well, not right now, but when you watch the game of baseball since your retirement, what's kind of been your favorite thing to follow? Is it the youth movement in the game right now? Could it be just Mike Trout? You know, what is something that you're kind of following in the game of baseball right now that's really kind of just piqued your interest?
You know, for me, it's always about how this game keeps evolving. I just wonder where we're going to get to next. You know, I've always said, you know, throughout time, this game has gotten better. Guys are stronger, faster, throw harder. For me, it's just amazing to see guys now that are, everybody throws 95 to 100. It seems like everybody throughout the lineup can take you deep from foul pole to foul pole. You know, so it just blows my mind, and I wonder how far this game can get and how good these guys can get, because it has gotten so much quicker. And you know, for me, I follow my old team. I follow the Twins and the excitement that they're bringing. You know, hopefully these guys can get back on the field and help out what's happening up in Minnesota right now and kind of bring everybody back to unity and like I said, get everybody back to somewhat of some normalcy. So hopefully good things happen here in the next few weeks.
Joe, one thing I really appreciate about you is your affinity for college baseball, and you've spent a lot of time at Lindsey Nelson Stadium working out between seasons, and you've also gotten to know Tony Vitello and his staff with them taking over the reins for Tennessee these last three seasons. But what was it like to perhaps see the Volunteers in their drought and see the Vols in the NCAA tournament after the 2019 season? And boy, it's just a shame that not only the Vols, but all college baseball got shut down right at the start of conference play. But what has it been like just to see Tennessee take the step forward it's taken under Coach Vitello?
Man, I was so excited for this season for them. They were on their way to do great things. But with that said, they still are. They got a very strong team. Their pitching staff is probably the best it's been in a long time. They've always had good offense, but now to match that with what everybody knows, you need deep pitching when you get especially into the regionals and super regionals. Need to be deep on the mound. And you know, speaking of that, I had a kid on my travel team that I coach with my son, and he went on to do some bigger and better things in travel ball, and he actually is a freshman and just committed to UT, so I'm excited about that. Another left-handed freshman already throwing upper 80s, so he should be one to watch here in a few years. But, you know, for me, just super excited for them to get back going. You know, I was obviously disappointed. I was looking forward to watching great baseball out there, grilling out on the deck in the outfield, and then everything came to a halt. But I know Tony's got these guys itching and ready to play, and they'll be back at it strong as ever when we get going.
Joe Nathan, a six-time All-Star, former big league closer, 377 career saves. That is inside the top 10 of all baseball history. Joe, you know, prayers for you, your family, stay safe, and thank you as always for joining us, and we look forward to doing it again.
You guys stay healthy, be safe. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe.
Yeah, great conversation. I know that, John, over the years you've been able to talk with Joe a couple of times. You pointed out at Lindsey Nelson Stadium and how he's come on Sports Talk a couple of times. I do want to point out something. You know, he was saying he likes to follow his former team, the Minnesota Twins. I was in Minnesota last year. It's actually just shocking to see, of course, the tragedy that took place in that city this past week, and then since with the riots and the protest. It was, you know, this week last year, actually. So it's been almost 365 days. That ballpark, it's I think it's only 3 or 4 years old. Mm-hmm. Target Field, just gorgeous. And I really enjoyed my time in Minneapolis. So I kind of want to echo what Joe said right there, just prayers for that city, prayers for our nation. It's a good city, great people, and it's truly breaking my heart and many others seeing what's going on right there this past week.
Yeah, it really is. It can be a fantastic city, and I have yet to go to Target Field. That's on the short list of stadiums that I haven't been to. At one point, I had been to all 30, but construction, that wave of construction, has pushed me behind the eight ball in regards to getting closer and closer to the full circuit. But that is one of the outstanding venues. Love the fact that they know that they're going to have some cool, crisp days at the start of the season and probably at the end. So just you have the stadiums that have the misters in place where, I mean, even at Great American for Cincinnati, you've got the misters that you can walk through in the outfield. So if it's a hot, humid day, you get a nice little breath of fresh air, kind of like you get down in Phoenix and other locales. But they've got the heaters. I mean, they've got big warmers that allow you to stand close to those if you need to take the chill off a Minnesota afternoon or evening. And you look at what is the football home for guys like Britton Colquitt, Harrison Smith, and you just hate to see it. And, of course, there are so many big discussions and progress that needs to be made in so many areas to perhaps take the edge off of something that is so unbelievably tragic and so unnecessary. I hope that we can get to a point in time where this isn't an issue, and it really is something to watch unfold. But I've been able to be in that city before and know guys that have spent a good portion of their career there. And so it is tough for, one, those folks to have to try and survive through this as well as just deal with what is a powder keg when it comes to what is at stake and what is at the crux of the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. So we hope and we pray that the city will continue to heal, our nation will heal, as this has been a ripple effect, and as you pointed out, something that will just continue to improve and do away with as we, you know, move on as a society and as a country. So if you miss any of our conversation with Joe Nathan, you can catch that online, 991thesportsanimal.com, in the podcast section, Saturday Sports Talk, and it'll be tweeted out on Twitter and on Facebook at Sports Radio WNML. Again, special thanks to big thanks to Joe Nathan for joining the program. All right, he kind of he ditched us there at 8:30, but Eric Ainge will join the program when we come back here in about 5 minutes. The Vol Network Classic broadcast today will be the 06 Tennessee 51-33 win at Georgia. And Eric Ainge, the quarterback of that football game for Tennessee.
Is he living on Central Time? What's the deal?
I don't know. He's something about a newborn baby he had to take care of. I don't know. But Ainge will check in. He'll kind of preview that broadcast when we return with Saturday Sports Talk as it rolls on. John Wilkerson, Eric Ainge here on The Sports Animal. All right, it's going to be the 06 Tennessee win at Georgia. That'll be the Vol Network Classic broadcast here on The Sports Animal. Coming up at 12:20 will be kickoff. At 12 o'clock, there'll be a pregame show, and Eric Ainge and Brian Rice caught up with Josh McNeil, former offensive lineman, VFL for Tennessee. He'll be the pregame show interview, so that'll be all starting at 12 o'clock. And, of course, this has been a fun series. Wanted to catch up with Eric Ainge in the last hour, but I don't know, he's busy doing something, probably sleeping in or whatever. But Eric Ainge joins the show now. Of course, Eric Ainge with John Wilkerson.
Sleeping in, please, son.
Sleeping in, yeah. Well, what's going on, man? We had 8:30. You just blowing me off, man.
Wah. Babies take precedence over you, Kaner. That's not, I mean, it takes a lot to put someone over you, but that it is indeed another human that I'm responsible for.
That's fair. Eric Ainge, quarterback of that Tennessee football team, the big win in 06, 51-33. Eric, I was talking to John earlier as we just kind of welcome you on, just kind of preview this football game, this broadcast coming up here today. It was a massive win. You fell down, you know, 24-7 at one point. Came back, won by nearly 20. And when I looked at the stat sheet, it didn't look like it was just a team win. Like, you threw for 270, which is solid. Arian Foster ran for 65 and 3 touchdowns, solid. You had two guys who had 90 yards receiving, solid. It just looked like a big team win. Of course, you had contributions on special teams as well. What can you tell me about just that, everyone kind of coming together to get that big win in Georgia back in 06?
Well, you know, it all started – when we talked to Josh about it, he did a good job of laying it out too. But, like, what we were doing, it was working. Like, we knew the game plan was solid. We had good tips, good film study, good preparation, good plan, and we just were making little mistakes here and there. One guy would, you know, miss a block here, one, you know, miss a throw here, miss a tackle. What we were doing was working. So when we went into halftime, you know, Coach Fulmer obviously was not happy, down 24-14, especially knowing this, but he was the one that kind of led the just keep doing what we're doing and stop making stupid mistakes. You know, the team that makes the fewest mistakes will win. Right now, that's not us. So we're not going to win if we keep doing this. If we just play our game, you know, and you hear that all the time from football coaches, you know, just, you got to worry about us, got to play our game. But that really was true. I mean, we back then, we were as talented as just about anybody we played. So if we took care of business, we were all right. And sure enough, in the second half, we took care of business. We stopped making those mistakes. We started executing at a really high level. And then Georgia felt the pressure, like Georgia often did back in those days. And that's when I think they started pressing and they started making mistakes.
Eric, it really was one of the all-time great turnarounds, especially to do it in their backyard. Georgia undefeated at the time, top 10 team in the country. We spoke with David Ligon about it, one of my all-time favorite VFLs, earlier this week on Sports Talk. And he said one of the things that stood out, and I know it's got to be tough, but he mentioned, and I think Jonathan Wade referenced it too, and that was the way that the defense, they got torched at the half when it came to the coaches saying, here's what's got to happen. Got to turn this around. What is it like when you see, one, a unit of a team get lit up by the coaching staff when it comes to trying to get back on track, and then also see them answer that challenge the way they did? Because after Georgia scored 24 the first 31, they only put 9 on the board the rest of the way.
Yeah. No, that's always, you know, and that's one of the fun things about playing this game, the three-phase game that is football. You can be doing everything in your power on your side of the ball, but if the other side's not taking care of business, then the team is losing. So it's up to one side of the ball sometimes to pick up the other side. And, you know, we did, I think in that second half, we did a really good job of picking each other up. Like, both of us, both sides of the ball, special teams even getting involved, blocking a punt, scoring a touchdown. It was everyone answered the bell. You know, I think the best thing that I can say about that game was, as much pressure as you had put on you down 24-14, it wasn't too much. The coaches didn't come in and start freaking out. You know, they were upset, but it was a calm frustration. It was a, guys, this is, you know, we were talking about execution, not effort, not buy-in, not any of these things we've seen sometimes around here in the past. It was, you know, not belief that you can get it done. I mean, gosh, we all knew we could get it done. It was just a matter of one side going out there and getting it done, and then the other side answering the bell. And when you get a few series like that in a row where the offense is lighting them up and then the defense goes and get pitches a 3-and-out or, gosh, gets a turnover, it makes it so much easier to just rally. I mean, that is the momentum that we always look for and talk about when we're looking at football. The second half of the 06 Georgia game was the epitome of that.
One of the things I remember most and enjoyed the most was just the smile on Coach Cutt's face, David Cutcliffe, the following week with the media availability, and that was just talking about the satisfaction that comes with, as he said time and again, hanging half a hundred on Georgia in Athens. And from your perspective, what was it like to just see a good game plan put in place, executed, and result in such a satisfying victory? Because Georgia, when you guys knocked them off, they lost 3 of the next 4. So they were undefeated before they met the Vols, then dropped 4 of their next 5, which I know you hate to see.
Yeah, you just
hate to see it.
Hate to see it. Yeah, see that? And that's kind of where, like, we knew Georgia had that in them back then, and I'm hoping that maybe they can get back to that here pretty soon. But if you could get on them and get them feeling the pressure, then they would fold. If you could get on them and get them feeling the pressure, and even if you weren't hitting yet, you could trash talk them into folding. You know, that's our Josh, when we interviewed him, it was fun. You know, I referenced a story where we were running the ball sometime in the second half, and he mauled the guy and just was laying on top of him, and all I could hear was Josh cracking up laughing. And I was, you know, in a game, you just, you know, you don't always see that, where a lineman's just laughing, and he was laughing, and then I hear him yell, "You weigh 80 pounds more than me," and he's just going off on the guy. "You're terrible." And it was kind of fun, because we had a little bit of swag back then, and you know, we like to talk a little trash too, and we let them know that they were about to fold once it all started happening. We're like, "Here you guys go again, you know, here it comes. Watch the Georgia implode. Here it comes." You know, we let them know it was about to happen, and then sure enough, it happened.
Is it when you get in their head, it's over? And so yeah, I love how you said, yeah, of course we let them know when it was happening. It was, you know, falling. Spiraling out of control right in front of their face. Eric, when did you know, you kind of piggybacking off of what you just said, when did you know you were going to win this game? Again, down 24-7, you mount that second half comeback. When did you kind of know that, boom, we're going to win this football game?
It was a couple series then. I think I scored that rushing touchdown where I was allegedly yelling, did I score? And then we got a turnover on defense, and we went right back out there and started picking them apart. It was during one of the drives after one of the turnovers when we went out there, and you could just tell in the huddle, like, we knew what was about to happen. And then you look over to the defense, man, they knew what was about to happen. They're starting to yell at each other and bicker back and forth. And that was when I knew. I don't know when everybody else knew, but that was when I knew. Once you get the other team starting to yell back at each other, and they're not yelling at you anymore, and they're blaming each other for why, you know, touchdowns. I hit Meacham on a touchdown in the corner, and they miscommunicated in cover two, and all they were doing was pointing at each other. And I remember kind of putting my head down and chuckling, running to the sideline, like, "Oh, here we go."
I'm glad you brought up the rushing touchdown, because I was going to, but since you brought it up, we can move on. Yes, you did. You did score a rushing touchdown. That was your only rushing touchdown ever, right?
That was it.
That's what I thought, but it made it count. A caller called into your show yesterday, and I want to bring this kind of revisit it right here. He said, you know, you were a junior at this time, right? This is your junior year.
Yeah.
Okay. So kind of where were you in your football IQ? Kind of growing into a college quarterback now, 3 years in, you've got a lot of football under your belt. Now you're looking like an NFL prospect, a pretty good quarterback. Kind of where were you in your development around this time and winning this big game on the road?
This was one of the games that I remember playing, the Cal game that to start that year. There was not a single play that happened where I got confused in that Cal game. There was no blitz. There was no defensive alignment. There was no play. There was nothing. I mean, I knew I didn't. It doesn't mean I completed every ball or called every right play or whatever. But I went going back watching the film, and they never got me. And I remember in that Georgia game, that being one of those games too, where you just kind of go, man, there was never a play where they got me. I remember we tried a trick play kind of in the second half, and I even knew that if we, you know, if I got any kind of pressure at all, I was going to sail it out the back of the end zone. Sure enough, boom, play fake, turned the guys all over me. And I just off my back foot sailed it 40, 50 yards out of the back of the end zone. And I remember even getting up going, well, if they didn't get me on that one, they're not getting me. And that was kind of a mindset that did that Cutcliffe with, you know, he used to say the only way to be confident that you're about to go have success is if you're truly prepared. If you've done everything in your power to prepare yourself to play and understand and film and everything, if you've done it all, then you ought to have confidence that you're going to go succeed. If you haven't, then you don't. And I remember going into that game, I remember even through the little trials and tribulations that we had, I remember just feeling super confident that it was going to work. So on the other side of the ball, when special teams started contributing, I remember being like, yeah, we got this.
It's a different feel today, but what was it like when Tennessee winds up on the cover of Sports Illustrated after such a resounding and satisfying victory in Georgia?
I remember we gave Warlow a bunch of crap. We were like, man, you haven't done, you finally, you made a play and you're on Sports Illustrated. Nice. You made a play, dude. But I mean, gosh, how fun is that? We, of course, were super happy for him, super proud to be anytime. You know, a lot of the publicity that we got at that time was positive, and that was just another example of it. And yeah, I mean, it was, you know, they were talking about the SEC power, you know, the power that is the Southeastern Conference. And it was a picture of the Tennessee Volunteers, you know, and that was, we enjoyed that. We enjoyed that for sure.
Well, a lot to look forward to. Again, kickoff for Tennessee at Georgia. The 06 game, a part of the Vol Network Classics, will be at 12:20. A special pregame show right here on the Sports Animal begins at noon with VFL Josh McNeil. That was a fun conversation you guys had the other day, and looking forward to hearing it again, Eric.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, appreciate you, man. You know, thank you for making the time to talk to us this morning. I know you're a busy guy.
Nah, man, it's easy. I'm going in to make some scrambled eggs for the kids. That's all.
All right, man. We'll talk Monday. That was Eric Ainge. And John, real quick before we break, I know we're up against it, but I want to hear this backstory real quick. I saw the Vol Network tweet about it over this past week. The guys, part of the crew, took an RV to the game, got into a little dust up, but still made kickoff. Well, what can you tell us about that?
No, that was a crazy story that I had forgotten about until I was reminded by Glenn Thaxton. And Brent Hubbs shared his thoughts. So if you want to hear the story, it's right at the start of Brent joining us for his weekly visit. So you can find the podcast news at 99.1thesportsanimal.com. But it was, first of all, it was potentially going to be a new way to go for the Vol Network. You got an RV, you arrive in style, you've got a driver, and everything's just taken care of. You go down in great comfort. Well, what happens is you get south of Chattanooga, and so many things. Either one, you have to keep pace like you're trying to qualify at Daytona, or you know there's either going to be construction or a backup due to an accident. Well, there was a backup, and the driver of the RV was not able to stop in time, and so hit a car. And so there was that kind of deal. And one of the things that Brent immediately pointed to, he says, so we're still filing out of the RV just to make sure everybody's safe and sound and get away from the accident a little bit. And he says, Tim Berry and one of his 12 communicators and or two ways says, well, I've already got a response from the emergency vehicles. So they're on their way. They're on their way now to get this taken care of. So not surprising at all that Tim Berry had some way to call in the authorities and get it taken care of as quickly as possible. So again, you've got the setback from the accident. Again, you're traveling day of, and so it then was, you were delayed, you felt rushed when you got there, and it could have been as miserable an experience as possible, because from that point, if Tennessee loses after falling behind 24-7, you've got the delay, you've got all of the adrenaline that goes from being in a situation like that and then getting to the game when you've got and you're behind the eight ball when it comes to getting ready for the broadcast. But you also had Tim Priest that was a part of that, and you had Bob Kessling and Jeff Francis. They go down and they get neck braces from the training staff for Tennessee. And so when the other portion of the Vol Network staff arrives, they've got the collars on, and they're saying that they have now retained Tim Priest for their representation. I mean, it was just one thing after another. It was one, they were fortunate that they were able to get through it the way they did. Tennessee won, but you just had seemingly what could have been a nightmarish trip down and back that turned out to be just one that you could point to and laugh at. It might have been a little soon to laugh about it in the first half. Yeah. But boy, they sure did enjoy telling that story, which has now grown, as Brent Hubbs points out, into kind of a fishtail from that point forward.
It's usually how that, you know, happens and transpires the years that follow. And as Eric Ainge pointed out as his reply to that tweet, well, glad it was all worth it. 51-33, go Vols.
So, yes, indeed. Again, that will be our Vol Network Classic. We'll air that right here on the Sports Animal today at noon. Special thanks to Eric Ainge. That interview will be up at 991thesportsanimal.com. A final segment as we wrap up this edition of Saturday Sports Talk. Jeremy Pruitt turned 46 years old this past week. What's been the best moment of his tenure so far? We'll discuss when we come back here on 99.1 The Sports Animal. Special thanks to Eric Ainge for joining the show. Of course, you can hear his show every weekday, 9 to noon, right here on the Sports Animal, alongside Brian Rice as well. But again, he was the quarterback of that Tennessee win down in Athens back in 06. You can hear that at 12 o'clock here on the Sports Animal. John Wilkerson joining me today, and it's always a pleasure to do a show with you. Jeremy Pruitt, Tennessee head football coach, turned 46 years old on Thursday. So kind of where would you evaluate, real quick, as we kind of put a bow on this show, what are some of the highlights of Jeremy Pruitt's tenure so far, about to enter year number three as head coach of the Volunteers?
Well, I couldn't have been more impressed with the way that the team stayed together. It says so much that you can start 1-4 and yet have everybody rowing in the right direction, in the same direction, to be able to win 7 of your last 8 games. So the fact that he held the team together, to me, was so impressive last season. As far as top victories, did a top 5 with Josh and Heather this week. I had the bowl victory at number 5 because of the way they rallied, went for the onside kick, and executed it so well at the perfect time. Number 4 could be higher because thankfully it got Tyler Ivins off the roof of the dealership. But Mississippi State, that was a big win. I have that number 4. Kentucky in year 1, that's the highest rating, the highest ranked team that you've beaten as the head coach of the Volunteers.
Number 10 of the time, Auburn, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And the win at Auburn, your first win against the SEC West in forever. You did it on the road. That was year 1. But I think the win at Kentucky, to me, you fell behind early, 13-0. You rebounded. You found your footing and then came up with a huge stop at the end. So you didn't play your best, but you gutted out a win you needed to get. And so, to me, the win at Kentucky last year would be perhaps the one that I circle as the best or the most important for Coach Pruitt and company.
Yeah, all 5 of those you just pointed out, very distinct memories from those games. The Kentucky game from this past football season, again, it was cold. It was on the road. I remember Garantano very inconsistent in the first half, but comes back in the second half, plays very good football. Tennessee's defense obviously played an outstanding game. And again, Lynn Bowden Jr., not a quarterback by trade, and I think Mark Stoops deserves so much credit for what he and Kentucky did this past football season when the devastating injuries to the quarterback room and Terry Wilson and company. But Lynn Bowden Jr. was on a run like we've never seen before. I mean, we're talking about 295 yards rushing in a game, a couple, just the Mr. Do-It-All athlete there, and they changed their offensive game plan. And, I mean, he got his a little bit. I think he ended the game. I'll have to go back and look. I think he might have had 70, 80 yards rushing. Maybe a touchdown, but Tennessee did a really nice job with Bowden Jr. in that ball game. And of course, the stop at the goal line, it's one of the biggest moments. I think you're right. I think that might be one of the biggest moments of Jeremy Pruitt's tenure thus far.
Yeah, and it was based on great film study and preparation that they knew the play and stopped it.
Absolutely. So Jeremy Pruitt turns 46 years old. I would say that Kentucky game from 2018 is number 2. The number 1 game for me would be that win on the Plains at Auburn in 2018. Auburn ranked number 21 in the country. Tennessee's defense would just shut down Auburn that game. Jared Sinnott was running for his life. A great, great effort from Tennessee's defense. And Jared Garantano was the National Player of the Year per an outlet because of his, I believe he threw for 330 yards. He threw for 3 or 4 touchdowns. It was a good game all around for Tennessee on the Plains back in 2018. John, it's been fun. Thanks, as always, for doing Saturday Sports Talk with me. I look forward to doing it again with you soon.
Enjoyed the heck out of it. You put together a great show. Glad to help out, and always appreciate the invitation.
Absolutely. Logan Ward, thank you. Thank you, Eric Ainge and Joe Nathan. Those two interviews, as they join Saturday Sports Talk, up on the website, 991thesportsanimal.com. The lead lap with Ron Morton and Callie and Chris Corb coming up next, 10 to noon, as we roll on Saturday Sports Talk concludes on The Sports Animal.